Welcome back! Woo! Episode 2.
Yeah.
Welcome to episode 2 of The Crime Light. I am your host, Ashton Fowler.
And I'm your co-host, Brooke Finch.
Yeah, welcome back.
Yeah, this episode's gonna be interesting.
So. It is. It's so this episode. So first of all, thank you so much for if you're coming back. Thank you so much for your support. We appreciate all the nice things that people have said, and that you like the way Brooke and I talk at one another.
Yeah.
So
and shout out to Muriel for calling me a Valley Girl. That's cool.
So thank you so much for tuning in again. And if you haven't listened to our first episode, we would love if you did that. It's about Gypsy Rose Blanchard. It's a doozy, if I do say so myself.
Super, like, unexpected.
Yeah, that's the word, huh?
Yeah. I was about to say twisty-turny, but I don't really like that term. Sounds like I'm a 4-year-old.
Twisty-turny. Okay, so we figured, so last week we talked about kind of a single murder. So this week we figured we'd talk about a serial killer. And this guy is really well known. You might have seen him portrayed by Zac Efron.
Yes!
In a new movie on Netflix. Shout out to that man for just being sexy as hell.
That's such an understatement.
So, if you haven't guessed it already, this episode, we are talking about Ted Bundy, ladies and gentlemen. Theodore Robert Bundy. So he was one of the world's most notorious serial killers, if you didn't know that already. He killed at least 36 women in the 1970s. He was a necrophiliac and a rapist. And for those of you at home who don't know what a necrophiliac is...
Don't Google it.
I'm just going to tell you right now. It is someone who has sex with dead bodies, which is completely unnerving and disgusting, but... And I'm going to kink shame this one. I am. Last time I said I wasn't on the last episode, but I'm going to kink shame here. This is disgusting. All right. I'm going to put it out there. Necrophilia is not okay. So then I'm going to ask a question. I'm going to ask you this. A lot of people look at him and they say he was so much more unnerving and different from other notorious serial killers. Like you look at other serial killers that were caught in the 1970s, like Ed Gein, John Wayne Gacy, Charles Manson. You look at all those guys and then you look at Ted Bundy and there's something that separates him. What do you think it is?
I think it's the fact that the way he upheld himself, like the clean and like the sharpness look to him, how he looked of the upper class, how he dressed, how he was so charismatic, like absolutely breathtaking, and how he just blended into society. Like with the other, like, serial killers, it's almost like it's not a surprise. Like,
yeah, you look at them, you're like, yeah, that guy could kill someone.
Yeah, exactly.
That guy could kill multiple people.
Like, just think of the feeling of you being in high school and you pointing out, like, yeah, that guy could shoot
at the school. That guy could kill the entire school.
That guy has, like, that guy has the capacity to do those things. Yeah. But with Ted Bundy, it was so different on a level of, like, he
looked normal.
Yes.
Acted normal. He was one of us. And you hit the nail right on the head. That is why so many people in the media from the 70s till now looked at him and were so caught off guard and completely unnerved by who he was because he didn't look like he had the capability to kill people.
Yeah.
Like, at all. And he even said this about himself. I was going to put this in later, but I'm going to go ahead and say it now. This is a quote from Ted Bundy himself. He says, "Everybody's fascinated with the notion that there is cause and there is effect, that we can put our finger on it and say, yeah, his father beat him when he was a boy. We could see it from when he was a kid. That's bullshit. There's nothing in my background which could lead one to believe that I was capable of committing murder. Absolutely nothing." Which
is chilling.
That's chilling. Like, that's...
It's absolutely insane.
For him to go ahead and acknowledge... Yeah, I'm normal. And I know it's weird to look at me and think that, hey, I'm one of you, but I could do this. It honestly goes to show, don't trust the people around you.
Yeah.
You know? Like, well, don't trust strangers. Do not.
And it's like, it's also even to the extent of like, I don't know where I was going.
Nice.
But it's like to the extent of, it's like, he's willingly admitting that like he's a psychopath and he's not a psychopath of like upbringing. Manson's just a straight-up psychopath, like, coming out of the womb type shit, like... Yeah. Completely and 100%.
Yeah, no. So, playing off of coming out of the womb, let's go into his background, like his early life.
Yeah.
So, Theodore Robert Bundy, which, what a kingly name, if I do say so myself. Theodore Robert Bundy.
Mans could be president.
Theodore Robert Bundy. He was born to Eleanor Louise Cowell on November 24th, 1946. Now, fun fact, Louise was unmarried, and, like, his father is, like, not known. Like, nobody knows who his father is. It could have been this, like, this army guy named, like, Lloyd Marshall, or it could have been a guy named Jack Worthington, just some rando, or, this is a little weird, a little gross, it could have even been his grandfather, like, Louise's dad.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a little twisty-turny.
Literally, like, now you see why he's messed up.
Yeah, like potentially...
maybe that's a little,
maybe,
like,
potentially that could be.
But who knows if he knew.
That's a little twisty-turny in and of itself, yeah? So, in 1951, Louise married Johnny Bundy, and the three of them moved to Tacoma, Washington. So, he grew up, honestly, pretty decently. He was in a working-class family. He never had any needs that weren't met. But Ted started to show, like, interest in strange things at a really early age. Like, when he was 3 years old, like, knives were, like, his shit. Like, they were his thing. Like, the child loved knives, you know?
Yeah. Like, it wasn't like a Boy Scout thing either. It was, like...
like, make you raise your eyebrows a little bit. Like,
like, why?
This is unnatural.
Like the, what do you have?
A knife! Yo! Oh, my God. So he would even, like, as an early teenager, he became a peeping Tom, which I guess, you know, you see things in, like, Grease, for example, when at the beginning he's, like, looking under those girls' skirts.
Yeah.
Like, that was just normal, but it's also, like, gross.
I mean, you know? But it's, like, I think it's also, like, I mean, I feel like it's somewhat normalized.
They ain't had the internet to get their fill of titties. Yeah, you know, they had to go through windows.
Skirt, yeah.
Another thing that I thought was, like, really weird about him, when he was younger, like neighborhood kid age, you know, when you would go outside and play with all your neighbors and stuff like that, ride bikes and stuff, Ted Bundy wasn't doing that. He was building tiger traps. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't know what a tiger trap is, it was a technique used in Vietnam for people to catch tigers. So, hence the name. Sound it out.
Sound it out, bud.
So what he would do, or what people would do, is they would build, dig a hole, and then put sharp sticks pointing up in the hole, and then cover it with vegetation so that hopefully an animal or a tiger would fall in it. Mm-hmm. And Ted would build these in the woods out near his home, and at one point, a little girl, like, fell in and slit open her leg, like, badly.
That's insane.
I know, like, me and my childhood friend Maxwell, like, we used to build foxholes when we'd do Nerf wars, but we didn't put, like, sticks and dangerous shit in them to, like, hurt other people, you know? Like, imagine, like...
The goal wasn't to harm. Like, no. It was just like, hey.
No, we were just trying to hide.
We were just trying to have some fun.
So, I thought that, like, as, like, an 8-year-old, 8, 9 years old, building a tiger trap to potentially hurt someone, like, you know it had the potential to hurt a person.
One, especially,
that's,
like,
kind of twisty-turny and twisted.
Especially, like, the developmental psychology side of it, that's when you're developing, like, bonds with people. Like, that's when you're making friends, like, you're starting to care, you're starting to share, like, I mean, you've already, like, pretty much been past that point. Like, you learned that when you're 5. So, at this point, you've formed relationships and emotional connections with, like, your friends. Like,
so, in order to be capable of doing that to another kid who is your friend,
you had to have had either, like, the whole, like, there had to be some sort of glitch in his developmental stage.
Yeah, mental makeup. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree. So, obviously, there was some kind of glitch in his mental makeup because man's killed 36 women. So,
and, like, raped.
Yeah, exactly. So, he went to church, he went to church camp, he was in the Boy Scouts, but he never really fit in as a kid. He had a speech impediment, and he was, like, really teased for it as a kid, bully. Like, growing up, yeah. And he, like, going as far as, like, the Boy Scout stuff, he could never complete, like, all the same tasks that the boys could. He couldn't tie the knots right, he couldn't shoot the guns right, he could, like, none of the stuff. He wasn't able to do it at the same level that the other boys were able to do it.
Which he really outdid himself later in life.
Oh, no, man's overcompensated, like... Like,
well, Miz was like, fuck all them Boy Scouts when I was younger. You stay strapped.
Oh my god. So yeah, no, no one ever really got, like, close to Ted, and, like, in high school and stuff like that, like, and he didn't really date either, and in his own words, like, he wasn't afraid of girls, he just, like, didn't understand, and didn't really want to understand.
Yeah, didn't have, like, an interest in it.
He didn't have,
which also, the fact that, like, no one wanted to get close to him, and he didn't really have a desire to reach out, is probably the thing that caused the whole, like, developmental stage glitch.
Yeah, maybe
like,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, just not forming connections when you're younger definitely causes issues when you're older.
Yeah. No, I agree. So, yeah. He never lacked, like, playmates. There was always something to do and friends to do it with. So he ended up going to college. He went to the University of Washington and got his degree in, get this, psychology.
What a king.
In 1972. Not only are you also a psychology major, but this man was a serial killer. Like, he knew the ins and outs. He was, like, watching himself.
Yeah, like, just, like, being able to observe human behavior, like, I think the manipulation part probably came very easy for him.
Oh, yes.
Because, like, Mance knew exactly how to, like,
manipulate the human mind.
Yeah.
Because he studied it for 4 years.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I heard he took an abnormal psych class, too.
Which is him.
Yeah.
Like, now we learn about Ted Bundy in abnormal psychology class.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Exactly.
I think he was such, like, this, like, is weird, but, like, Mance was a genius. Like, the fact that he could plan, like, his whole, like, Mance started out early and planned everything based on what he was going to do in the future and perfected it.
Yeah. No, a lot of his stuff was, like, definitely premeditated, like, and handled well.
He was the 8-year-old that was like, what do you want to be when you grow up? A serial killer. Like, he knew. He knew he wanted to do that shit.
I don't disagree with you, honestly. I really don't. So he, again, another kind of, like, twisty-turny thing. He got accepted into law school. Mm-hmm. And, like, he actually didn't do well on the, I can't remember the test that you have to take to get into law school. He didn't do well on it. So, his options to get into law schools were, like, very limited.
Also, he got terrible grades his first 2 years of college.
Yes. So, his options as far as law school were, like, very limited. So, he ended up going to, like, a really small one that he just didn't, like, finish getting his degree at.
But he got into a good, well, he started out at, like, a good law firm because one of the bosses took interest in him.
Yes.
Agreed. And we're like, fuck the first 2 years, like, now, yeah, now you know what you're doing.
Yeah. So in that time, he dated a girl for a while that he absolutely, like, cherished, fell in love with her, like, absolutely obsessed with her. She had money, she had class, she was beautiful, and then they, like, broke up. Mm-hmm. And he was, like, he was absolutely, like, devastated. But, like, after their breakup, he kind of, like, grew up, I guess. Like, he got really confident, and he started getting involved in things, like, socially, and he even got involved in, like, politics and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, I want to mention, too, this girlfriend that he was in love with, almost all of his victims looked exactly like her.
Yeah. Dark hair, middle part,
super pretty, like, I think that should be noted. That's, you know,
Mance had a type. Not just a type in dating, but a type in, like,
he had type in bodies, and then he had type in bodies. Like,
I live by that.
I live by that. So yeah, he got involved in a lot of political stuff in the 70s on campus and off campus as well. So he actually got hired by the Republican Party, a Republican Party candidate, to spy on the Democratic Party. And he, like how did he do that?
So basically, his longtime girlfriend, Elizabeth, said that,
this is not the same girl.
Yeah, no, this is the girl he dated for the longest, though, I think. She had a daughter.
Yeah.
Molly, too, and that he was really involved with. But, she said, like, he would start going to, like, their, like, Republican Party, like, you know, where the person would talk or whatever. What are they called?
Debates?
Debates, yes. And, he, you know, he really started getting out there. And, I guess somehow, like, Liz didn't really know everything that happened, but she was just kind of, like, somehow, like, he got intertwined with all that. He was hired by them to go follow, like, stalk one of the Democratic candidates and, like, get all this inside information. Well, he decided to throw in the twist of putting disguises. Like, he would do mustaches, wigs, like, different clothing, like, certain stuff along those lines. And he got super invested in it to the point where he was bragging about it all over his law firm office. Like, showing pictures, like, telling them. He just really, like, that was such a confident boost that he needed. That was when I think he really became arrogant, where he was like,
yeah,
if I'm able to, like, to stalk a, like, someone who's running for, like, a government position.
And not get caught?
Who am, like, who's gonna stop me? Yeah, like, who gonna pop me type
what
shit.
What can I do now?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and, like, those disguises definitely played show out themselves later. So, yeah, so this ties into, as he began, like, after that incident, as he began to grow as an adult, he began to show more signs of, I'm a BG straight creepiness. Mans was creepy.
Mans was a creep.
Like he, you look at him and you're like, first of all, a lot of girls are like, oh my gosh, Ted Bundy, heartthrob, super hot.
Which I'm like that. I am one of those bitches be bonkers over Ted Bundy. I'm bitches type shit.
And I'm not going to subscribe to the wave there. I don't agree. I think he's a very normal looking person. And I mean, if you compare him to other serial killers, like, yeah, he's more attractive than John Wayne Gacy. But
I think,
like,
I also would have just I think I just would have fell in love with his personality type shit.
Yeah, maybe so. But yeah, like I said, he began, like, a lot of people, he began to show more signs of being creepy, and, like, a lot of people overlook that because he's attractive.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, he said in an interview when he was, later, spoiler alert, he gets arrested, while he was in Carson, like, you don't know.
Yeah.
While he was incarcerated, he did an interview, and he ended up saying that, like, porn and sex, like, ruled his life. Like, he looked at women as objects to be controlled, and, like, he began to get into porn at a really young age, which, like, you know, again, like, he's a teenage boy, you know, but, yeah, like, his life was, like, ruled by that.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that can, like, sex mixed with a messed up mental state can mix poorly.
Yeah, well, and even, like, the conversations that we've had with, like, some of our guy friends, the fact that, like, porn desensitizes and objectifies women,
yeah,
especially, like, even, like, in today's society, like, we have, like, a friend of a friend who literally stopped watching it because he was, like, it literally just desensitized me to women. Like, I wasn't able to, like, not treat them like an object during sex.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, that was just what he knew. Like, that was what he saw.
And that's what it ended up ruling Ted's life, like, he, but in a bad way.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't, like, he was able to stop or something, like, porn and sex, just, like, that was all in his,
yeah,
that was it. And he viewed women as objects, and I think that, like, that mixed with a lot of different stuff in his head, like,
mm-hmm,
is part of where, you know, the serial killing came out. But
yeah,
he, like I said, he began to show more signs of being creepy. You look at him being a peeping Tom as a kid, and that escalating
into his adulthood.
Yeah, and like, his girlfriend and his brother, you said that there was, like, this look in his eyes.
Yeah, it was, like, a physical, to where his eyes look like his pupils were closer together. Like, not, like, you know, like, cross-eyed, but, like, they physically...
Imagine.
They physically,
imagine Ted, like, about cross-eyed to kill you, and is just cross-eyed.
No, so, like, yeah, like, they said, like, there was a certain look in his eyes before he went and did his killings. Of course, they didn't know about his killings, but, like, they were with him moments before he went and did these things.
Yeah.
And they both, like, described the look in the exact same way. Like, the interview with his brother talking about, like, the look, and, like, Liz talking about the look, and, like, he even had, like, the first time Liz ever saw this look was, they were white water rafting, and, it was, like, the week before one of his, like, really well-known killings, but, they were white water rafting, and she was sitting on the edge of the raft, like, just kind of, like, you know, like, relaxing, and he just straight up pushed that bitch off, like, pushed that hoe into the water, didn't help her, kind of, like, turned his back to her. She had to climb up, like, a rope that was attached to the back of it, And once she got back in, he just had this, like, complete calmness, kind of a smirk, and the look in his eyes. And she was like, that's when I knew, like, it was disturbing.
Something's
like,
wrong.
There
yeah.
was, he was genuinely disturbed.
Good for her. Because, you know, you hear a lot of stories about girls who will see stuff like that and then just, that's not a red flag. Not like I mean, danger.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't think she did anything immediately after that.
But
I'm,
she still but like, recognized that it was disturbing and something was probably wrong with him. Yeah.
And then,
props to her.
The whole, going along with the whole creepiness thing still, her daughter, Molly, she was about 5, and Ted was really the father figure that she never had because, her mom, Elizabeth, grew up Mormon, and she got married to this guy in college. They got married, like, but she never really thought the Mormon life was for her. So it ended up, like, not working out, and so that's why she moved. And so Ted was, like, prevalent in her life for a while. Like, he was legally her stepfather, I think. So there was one time they were playing hide-and-go-seek, and he was, like, hiding under the covers in their living room, and she went to go pull the covers up, and he was completely naked. Ooh. Her being 5 years old, she goes, like, you're naked. Like, she resignated, was like, you're naked. Like, why are you naked? And she, like, in the interview, she was like, I knew something. Like, I knew it wasn't right.
I'm in danger.
Yeah, like, she knew it was not okay. And so he had the excuse, like, oh, like, I have invisibility powers, but my clothes don't. So, like, I had to take my clothes off because I didn't want you to see me.
You're lying.
And she was like, bitch, you were under a blanket. Like, the fuck? And so, and he just kind of played it off. He ran back to, like, this bookshelf that they were supposed to touch to, like, not be it. And she never told her mom until a couple years later because she knew how happy her mom was with Ted, and she didn't want to mess anything up because she always found him quite magical. So, like, her being a 5-year-old, it was not that far-fetched for him to say, like, oh, I have invisible powers.
Yeah.
Like,
You're five.
Yeah, like, man's had a lot of capabilities.
We said this in the last episode. What are you going to do? You're 5. You're going to check him? Exactly.
Yeah, like, what? Like, you're going to be like, no, let me see right now. Like, turn him invisible right now.
You're fucking lying. Let me see you.
But, yeah, so that's kind of, yeah, all
yeah,
that
so, so that's, there's your background on Ted Bundy. So you have his early life and then slowly him just, like, derailing into this serial killer. So we're gonna go ahead and go over the start of his killing career. I don't know what else to call it but a killing career, you know, like the start of his spree, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, but 36 women, that's a lot for a spree.
Yeah,
like,
it's not just a spree.
I feel like it's just kind of like a spree is just like a little double
sprinkle
here, like double in there. Oh my God.
No, okay, so long time. I'm good. Killing career. That's
yeah.
It. Solid.
Yeah, perfect.
That's about it. Okay, so his murder career began in 1974. So to give you a little bit of insight on the 70s, in the 70s, so the 60s themselves were a pretty violent time. You know, you've got everything with civil rights and stuff like that. So it's a time of unrest. But then in the 70s, violent crimes went up 130% from the 60s. Murder went up 62%, and rape went up 116%. Which I think those statistics are just, they're asinine. Like, that's an insane amount for things to go up in just 10 years.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And the fact that Ted Bundy became a part of that statistic is just crazy. So just to give you a little bit of, like, insight as to what, like, how he got women to trust him so that he could abduct, rape, and murder them. He used ruses like, a fake cast or crutches or, like a fake accent even, or even a cop ruse, like badge, gun, the whole nine to abduct, rape, and murder his victims. So I'm gonna go ahead and go over the known victims that he has. It's said that there are 36, but some officials believe it's far more than 36, but he has confessed to 36.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go over some of them and give you the details, and the others, not so much, but we're gonna mention them all because we want to be respectful, because all of these women were affected, obviously in a horrible way.
Yes.
So we're gonna go ahead and start. So, his first victim was Joni Lenz. She was 18. She actually survived this attack. It was January 4th, 1974. She was a student at the University of Washington, and she was raped with a bedpost. Mm-hmm. And you told me that he, like, shoved it so far up her that it, like, ripped her bladder.
It split her bladder in half.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And she lived.
She was actually left there anywhere from between 18 and 20 hours until her guy roommate came downstairs and found her like that in the basement. And, like, in the scene, like, the bed was completely destroyed. Like, the mattress was, like, on the ground. Mm-hmm. Like, she even says, totally selfless. Like, she was like, I just feel bad for my roommate for having to see me like that.
That's so sad.
Like, not even, like, I feel sad for me being in that state, but, like, I feel bad for him seeing me like that, because, like, that was so traumatizing. Horrible. And, like, she has not even talked about it. Like, she went into, like, hiding kind of after, and was just now interviewed in the docuseries I'm watching on Amazon Prime, and it's called Ted Bundy Falling in Love with a Killer. But that was, like, her first interview with the public. That was her first time really talking about it with anyone besides, like, her therapist.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And ladies and gentlemen, that is only number one.
Literally.
What a doozy. Jesus. Okay, so the next one was Linda Ann Healy. This is February 1st, 1974. So this is about a month after the first attack. She was a University of Washington student, and she was kidnapped and murdered. She was actually a, like, a radio show host for a mountain. She'd give you the weather and stuff like that, and she had an alarm, and she had, like, what'd you say, five other roommates that lived with her?
Yeah, there was, like, two on, like, the top floor, two on, like, the ground level, and then, her and, like, the roommate were on the bottom floor, but they had, like, separate rooms. But she worked for, like, the radio, and so, of course, she had to get up early, and she had never set, like, off missed. Her alarm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and so, yeah. I remember, like, they did an interview with, like, the roommates, and basically it was, they had talked about how, like, they didn't know what happened. They were like, well, maybe, like, she never leaves, but, like, maybe she, like, went and saw a guy, whatever, and, like, the police were being really naive at first, and they were just like, no, this didn't happen. So then the police, like, finally an investigator went down there, and he had lifted up, her bed was perfectly made the next morning, mm-hmm. So they thought, okay, maybe she went on a walk, but she had never went on a walk alone. She only went with people. So they were like, well, that's kind of weird. So her bed was perfectly made, and the investigator lifted up the sheets, or lifted up the comforter, and there was blood everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then he went over to the closet, and there was a bloody nightgown. So the fact that Ted
had was to, able to sneak her out, like, with a new outfit.
Yeah, like, he had to make her bed, undress her, redress her, and sneak her out
with five other roommates,
and the house alarm didn't go off. He had snuck through the side basement door, which her roommate had locked that night. She's the last one to come in, her, like, basement floor roommate. She's the last one to come in, locked the front door, all the other doors, and the side doors she locked it last. And the fact that the side door was, like, open, like, jeez, insane. That's this man had skill. Crazy.
So then about 3 weeks later, Donna Gail Manson, she was 19. She was murdered on March 12th, 1974. And then two murders on the same day, about a month later, Susan Rancourt, she was 18, and Roberta Park, she was 20. That was on April 17th, 1974. And then about 2 months later, you had Brenda Carroll Ball. She was 22, and she was murdered and raped. And then you had a woman named Georgiana Hawkins. She was missing, and her body wasn't found, but her skull was found on Taylor Mountain. She had been missing since June 11th, 1974. So the next two girls are... Their story is kind of where things start to take a turn for Ted, because this is at a festival at Lake Sammamish State Park. This is on July 14th, 1974. And this is where he is in a crowd full of witnesses, and he starts saying his own name in a ruse. So he goes around asking women, he's in a cast and he's using an accent, and he goes around asking women if they can help him put something in his car because he can't. So he's going around just saying things like, hi, my name is Ted. I need some help. Would you be able to help me? And there are women turning him down. But there are two that don't. And their names are Denise Naslin. She was 18. And Janice Ott. She was 23. And their bodies were later found on a hillside near Issaquah. So the next murder was about 3 months later. Her name was Nancy Wilcox. She was 16. Then you had Melissa Smith. She was 17. This is October 26, 1974. And she was actually the daughter of a police chief in Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
And she was raped and beaten by Bundy, and her body was found in the mountains nearby, which kind of ballsy, if you ask me. Daughter of a police chief? There's his arrogance right there. The fact that he's able to, or willing to...
Well, and I don't even know if he had knowledge. I mean, that wouldn't stop him, but
well,
I don't
I'm sure
know.
When he found out, it boosted his ego.
Oh, for sure. The fact that he was right under the police officer's nose.
Yeah, and killed his daughter.
Yeah, well, and especially being in a new place, and this mm-hmm. was one of his, like, first few killings yeah. in Utah. Like, that's insane. Man's yeah. was ballsy.
That was crazy. The next one was Laura Amy. She was 17. She went missing on Halloween and was found dead. Now this girl is important because she survived. Her name is Carol Durant. She was 18. And on November 8th, 1974, Bundy found her in a mall and identified himself as a police officer. He told her that her car was like broken into and that she needed to quote unquote come down to the station. So then once she's in his car, he attempts to handcuff her, and she fights him off, ends up jumping outside the passenger door while he's driving. He ends up stopping the car.
He was pulled over.
Was he pulled over?
At this point. Yeah, because that was when she really knew something was wrong. Like, he had pulled over on the side of the road.
And oh, and like, that's when he attempted to handcuff her.
Yeah, when he had the gun.
There we go.
And he was like, I'll fucking blow your brains out. Like, or like,
yeah, don't he say said, anything. Don't scream or I'll kill you.
Yeah.
That's what he says.
And like, she said he said something along the lines of like, I'll blow your brains out right now. And like, she was like, do it. Cause she was like, I'm gonna die fighting. Because in this time, there was hella propaganda. Literally, like, videos from rapists in jail saying, there's this one saying, submit, submit, submit until it hurts, because it'll hurt you less in the long run if you just let it happen. It's literally a conversation, a whole ass conversation between him and this other rapist who are literally in custody, and they're talking about how if you just like let it happen, they won't hurt you as much.
That's twisted.
Like, a tip to, like, the women. Like,
that's twisted.
Hey, so, like, if you're gonna get raped or, like, gonna get killed, like, don't struggle a lot. Like, just, like, calm down. Like, calm yeah. down.
So, after seeing that, she was like, no.
Yeah.
I would rather well, die.
And she was like, she knew. She was like, I had seen all those videos, but something in me was fighting every urge to just, like, stay calm.
Hmm.
So, I mean, she was like, I don't even know how I got to the car. She was like, I was so tiny. I was not strong. But she'd thrown herself out the passenger door. He followed her through the passenger door. Like, Miss didn't even get out the driver's seat, which was okay, go off. and she runs around. And as soon as she hits the, like, road,
she flags down a car.
Yeah. Well, she, like, a car comes and she grabs the door, like, busts it open. And just hops in.
Yep. And so, thank you for correcting yeah, my no, misinformation.
You're
but after that, he's pissed. So mm-hmm. this is the same night. He's pissed. And he finds 17-year-old Deborah Kent and kills her on the same night. So then the next one was Karen Campbell. She was 23. She died January 12th, 1975, about 2 months after the Deborah Kent Carol DeRonch incident. And then you have the next, like, big ruse that he uses. He's struggling on crutches when he meets Julie Cunningham. She's 26, and he ended up killing her on March 15th, 1975, after she agreed to help him to put something in his trunk. The next one was Denise Olverson. She was 24. She went missing on April 6, 1975, and was found deceased. Then you had Melanie Cooley. She was 18. She died April 15th, 1975, just a little over a week later. And then you had Lynette Culver. She was 12 years old. And she went missing on May 6th, 1975. Then you had Susan Curtis. She was 15. and she went missing on June 27th, 1975. A lot of these women, their full bodies were never found. Some of them there were, but a lot of them, they were never found, but their skulls were found on Taylor Mountain, where mm-hmm. he buried a lot of their bodies. So then these were all happening 1974, 1975. He had a pretty steady schedule. And then there's a 3-year break where he's actually incarcerated. Mm-hmm. But we'll get on that in a minute. So in 1978, on January 15th, 1978, Ted Bundy breaks into the Chi Omega sorority house at Florida State University and attempts to murder 4 women. One of these women is Margaret Bowman. She's 21. He walks into the sorority house with a piece of, like, oak firewood and beats them and then strangles them. So that happened to Margaret Bowman. And then a woman named Kathy Kleiner. She was 20 years old. And then there was a woman named Karen Chandler at the same sorority house. She was 22. He beat her and broke her jaw and her right arm, knocked 4 of her teeth out, but she survived. And then the last woman who had the most damage was Lisa Levy. She was 20 years old. He bit into her left ass cheek and left a sinking impression. He sexually assaulted her with a hairspray bottle, and he ripped off one of her nipples before strangling her with a nylon stocking. Oh my God.
No, that's and it happened all within these 15 minutes.
These 4 assaults happened within 15 minutes, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah. Well, fun fact, I was actually in a sorority. I dropped. LOL. But basically, what I was told during going through recruitment, through Chi Omega was Panhellenic, which is kind of like the overall, like, national, like, group that, like, watches over and makes all of our rules for Panhellenic sororities. What I was told is, like, there's, like, a suspicion that the reason they changed the law to only 12 girls being able to live in the Chi Omega house at a certain time is because of Ted Bundy.
Like, there were about 40 women living in the
Chi Omega in the house at the time. So, like, that's lowering crazy. It, which, I mean, I don't know how that makes a whole lot
there's
of sense.
There's still women in a house that people can murder, but okay, go but off.
Like, them lowering the number, that's just, like, a suspicion, too. I don't know if that's, like, a for sure thing. I just remember them telling me that, and I find it really interesting because I was like, oh my gosh, like, Ted Bundy had an effect on literally everything.
Yeah.
Everything he touched.
Yeah. So, immediately after the Chi Omega sorority house incident, Bundy crawls through the window of Cheryl Thomas. She's 21, and she's living at Florida State, but she's not in the sorority house. And he attempted to beat her to death, but she survived because her neighbor heard what was going on and called the police. So she was beaten really badly, but she survived.
Mm-hmm.
And then about a month later, on February 9th, 1978, he murdered Kimberly Leach. She was 12 years old, and she was one of the youngest and his last victim. And she disappeared in the middle of the school day. Like, if that doesn't show you, like, how ballsy, like, this man really was.
Well, it's insane because all of his abductions and / killings were done in public.
Yeah.
Like, all of his abductions were done in public. Like, the 2 that were done at the festival, what is it called? What festival?
It was a sailboat festival at Lake Sammamish.
Yeah. Those 2 were actually, a police officer saw them.
Yeah, like,
I don't think he was on duty, but, like,
people were there. Yeah, like, people were gathered.
No, they said there was, like, thousands of people there. Like, it was crowded, and
for him, that's just a sea of victims.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Yeah, and, like, the fact that, like, a police officer saw it, and him knowing after, like, wow, like, he even said, like, the girls looked uncomfortable, but they were just, like, out of the kindness of their heart, they were like, okay, I'm gonna go with this man, like, no one else will.
That's insane. So there's your list of known victims. So now we're gonna get into the, in your words, twisty-turny part of this episode, and this is how he got caught. Because, obviously, man's had a repertoire of... he had a resume.
Yeah.
So in 1975, he was in Utah and he got pulled over for a traffic stop. He was driving with his lights off and the officer ended up detaining him for a misdemeanor. As the cop was like looking through his car, he found all of the stuff needed to commit a murder. So he found like a ski mask. He found an ice pick. He found a crowbar. He found rope. He found bloody sheets. Like, he found everything. So man's got arrested and he ended up getting convicted of kidnapping, Carol DeRanche, who she picked him out of a police lineup. And they had all these men say, "Don't scream or I'll kill you."
Mm-hmm.
And she picked out Ted Bundy. So he was then extradited to Colorado, where he was going to be placed on trial for murder and kidnapping. And he was left alone in a room in the courthouse. He was going to make a call and he was faking it. And he just asked if he could have some privacy. And stupidly, one of the officers on duty obliged. And man's jumped out of the second story window of the courthouse and ran. He booked it. Like, man's ran away. And they're in Colorado, so he ran into the woods of Aspen with no resources on him.
Yeah.
He just ran. Like, he ran away. So Mance is in the forests of Aspen for 7 days with no resources. So finally, after those 7 days, he comes crawling back into town because he was basically dying.
Mm-hmm.
And yet again, he was arrested.
But he was like, "Oops, like, my bad, Chiefs, like, I accidentally fell out that hole." Oh, like, man. How you accidentally fall into pussy when, like, you get him caught cheating?
How you suck dick on accident?
How you fall and suck dick on accident?
So, yeah, he just came back and was like, "My bad, guys." Like, so they arrested him again, obviously. And so once in prison, he searched for ways in his cell to get out because he was determined to flee.
Yeah.
And so he ended up finding out that you could crawl through the air vents when people were showering because it made noise. And so no one was going to hear. So he climbed on top of a pile of books, got out through the air vents, and escaped yet again for 49 days. He was out in Florida.
Yeah, he fled across the country.
Because so this is
these, you know, genius police officers that let him escape twice. At the time, it wasn't really, like, they didn't share state records across, like, the border.
No, because they didn't have the same, like, resources that we did as far as, like, internet goes.
So. And it was also, one of the interviews that I saw was with one of the women who was on his case pretty much the whole time. And she was saying how state records weren't really, like, shared because it was more of, like, a cocky thing. Like, "Oh, I found him. Like that's mine." Because this was also when women were not allowed to be on, really, the police force. Like, she was one of the only women in her... She was the only woman in her graduating class and one of the only few for almost, like, the first half of her career.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. So,
yeah, this was... Yeah, no, so it just... It makes sense that he went undetected because you get him out of your sights at that point. And there's no getting him back because you don't have the resources that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
So if he committed another murder and got arrested for it, you wouldn't know because you don't have CODIS or APHIS or anything like that. Like, you have none of that at your fingertips. This is where he flees to Florida, and then he committed the Chi Omega murders, where, like we said, he beat four women with a wooden log, strangled one with a nylon stocking, and then strangled another and tore off one of her nipples. Which is, Jesus Christ. Like,
imagine... I didn't know that was physically possible.
I know, tearing off a nipple. Oh, my God.
And in less than 15 minutes, all of this?
Yeah, no, that's insane.
Like, man, this was quick.
It's insane. And then he bit deeply into her left butt cheek and it left, like, an impression, which would become crucial evidence to the police in later trials. And he even tore the underwear off one of the girls so violently that it left burn marks on her thighs, which I also didn't know was possible. Like, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Police apprehended him almost a month after, the Chi Omega stuff happened after a routine, like, wants and warrant stop, and they found out that the car that he was driving was stolen. He didn't even have, like, it wasn't his license. Like, he stole the license and everything with the car, so it wasn't, they didn't know it was Ted Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this case, the cases that he had participated in, like, it wasn't national news at this point. So they, people didn't know who he was, just in, like, the upper Northwest, yeah. people knew who he was. So, like, when you looked at him down in Florida, you wouldn't be like, oh, that's Ted Bundy with, like, a different license. They just thought it was that man.
Also, they didn't know for a while. I mean, they had a suspicion, but, like, they didn't know for sure that, like, for a long time that, like, all of the, like, killings were him.
Yeah, no, because, again, they didn't have the same...
And this is when serial killers were first becoming a thing.
Like, they didn't even have the term serial killer in yeah. the 70s. So, yeah. So, they found out that the car he was driving was stolen. And Bundy actually tried to run, like, knock the cop down and tried to run. The cop fires a warning shot in the air and is able to, like, subdue him and detain him.
Yeah.
And Bundy even said when he was in the car, he was like, I wish you would have just fucking killed me. Like, those are the words that he whispered to the cop in the back of the cop car. So, he ends up getting put on trial because mm-hmm. they find out, oh, shit, this is Bundy. This is the Bundy? Oh, my God, we got this man in custody. And they find out that he's probably responsible for the Chi Omega murders. So, they end up putting him on trial for it. And he ends up firing his lawyer and standing in as his own defense attorney. Which, first of all, is unheard of.
Yeah, this was a first.
This was a first. And it was also a first for a case to be publicly televised. So yes. his cases were the first to be televised on national television.
He was definitely a trendsetter.
Yeah. Well.
Arrogant, in a way, motherfucker.
In a way. So, in one of his trials, I thought this quote is always interesting to me. The judge said, these crimes were extremely wicked, shockingly evil, vile, and the product of design to inflict a high degree of pain. Which, again, if you haven't seen the movie with Zac Efron, it's called Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, Vile, and Vile. Go stream that shit on Netflix.
No, deadass. Please. You will not regret it. If you do, you can kill me.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get into the actual trial. So the prosecution had... witnesses, and these witnesses were sorority girls, that had seen him walk out of the sorority house with his oak weapon.
With blood on it,
just dripping off this log. So they identified him, they're like, yeah, that's the fucking guy! That's the one!
Hold a log real quick so we can see.
Oh my god.
Sorority bitches, yeah, be like...
Wait, can you, like, hold the log? No, like, at a different angle.
Yeah, like, just like
no, like, this. Put your arm, like, a different way.
And, like, walk.
Like, strut a little.
Yeah, just...
Because he was, like, really confident, like, if I didn't tell you.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I don't fucking know. Like, it was dark, and I was probably a little drunk, but that's definitely the guy.
I hate it.
Was that
here.
Good? Was
yeah,
that good?
No, yeah. No, spot on interpretation. Okay, cool. No offense to all the sorority bitches out there. Just, like, it's whatever. To each its own.
To each its own. So the other evidence that they had was they took castings of Bundy's teeth and matched it with the impression left on Lisa Levy's ass cheek. And it was a match. Yep. It was a direct match. He had a crooked front, like, left tooth.
Uh-huh.
And it was a match. Like,
dead
set match.
I feel like that would have been the record breaker for me.
Yeah, if you're on the jury, like,
sold. No, I'm saying, like, dating him wise would have been the crooked tooth.
What are you, oh my god. Okay, alright. Moving on. Okay, so, Jesus Christ.
The funny thing is, like, it's true.
Okay, so on July 24th, 1979, he was convicted on 3 separate counts of attempted first-degree murder and 2 counts of burglary. And he took a plea deal that if he pleaded guilty, he would only get 3 counts of 25 years in prison. So his first one was 75 years in prison, and he agreed to that, and then last minute didn't agree to it. But it took the jury less than 7 hours to come to a conviction.
Which is really good. Like, that's...
That's really quick.
Yeah, that's real quick. Not a lot of time to evaluate all of this.
That's real quick. So then that was the Chi Omega murder trial, and then you had the trial for 12-year-old Kimberly Leach, and he was actually found guilty. And during this penalty phase of the trial, Bundy found a loophole. So a little bit of insight here. There was this woman named Carol Ann Boone.
And, psycho.
Truly. And that's an understatement. Man's, woman's was, she was bitches be bonkers.
Bitches be bonkers.
Bitches be bonkers. She worked with Ted for a while, and, like, in his early years. And then she reconnected with him and found out that he was on trial in Florida, came to his aid, was there for him, fell in love with him. They ended up having sex.
And, like, she was visiting
like, at visiting jail. Hours. Like, they paid off one of the cops and were just like, hey, yo, let us fuck, please.
Let me get my nut in.
And they let him! And so they had sex. She ends up getting pregnant. And so that's Carol Ann Boone. She's psychotic. She goes on media and she's like, he didn't do it. She went on in court. She went on the stand to testify for him, like not against him, but like testify in his favor.
Yeah. Like if that doesn't give you like an insight on how charismatic this man was, she jeopardizes her whole like identity,
reputation for backing
for him.
Yeah. So this woman is crazy in love with him. So bringing it back to the loophole that he found out, so again, this man had a little bit of legal training, right? He found out that if you provided a marriage declaration in court in front of a judge that you were married. So what does he do? He is on the stand defending himself and he asks the honor. He asked the judge.
Your Honor.
He asked the judge to stop the proceedings. And he gets down on one knee and proposes to Carol Ann Boone in front of the entire nation.
And then she exposes the fact that they're pregnant.
Yep. Talk about a media circus. So this was Ted's idea, was going to be like,
If I can distract
from the case, am I guilty or am I not, might buy me a little more time.
And the fact that he was a soon-to-be father. Like,
yeah, then people looking at, like, the death penalty. That was another thing, was they were looking for the death penalty in this case. So, for him to be like, I am now, like, a newlywed, and I'm going to be a father. It might take a turn for him.
It
for
might influence the jury.
Yeah, it might influence the jury's
decision
because he's a father and a newlywed. However... it ain't work because he got the death penalty. He was sentenced to death on February 10th, 1980. He got that sentence. So in 1986, he gave his full account of what he did to two reporters in hopes to prolong his sentence. And this is where you get the Ted Bundy tapes on Netflix, which also, if you haven't watched that, that's a fantastic show.
For sure.
And this is actually the first time he'd ever confessed to anything on any level of what he was accused of. Because you look back at the Chi Omega Girls case, he was going to take the plea, where if you plead guilty, we'll only give you 75 years. And then he backed out of it because he refused to say that he was guilty. He refused to go globally and say he had done those
horrible
things.
Which is also kind of, I feel like, a pride thing. Like,
yeah, it's his ego.
I mean, the whole time.
It's a man's arrogance.
The whole time he's like, I'm going to do this extreme thing, like, to kill this one bitch. And, like, so caught up in, like, the works part of it. And then bitch can't even back it up.
Nope.
Like, Manson didn't even want to claim it.
Nope.
Even when they found him guilty, which I think is incredibly weird. Considering all the things, like, I've heard about him and, like, his personality and him being so cocky, like, why wouldn't you want to own up to those things? He even owned up to his girlfriend of, like, robbing malls, like, in their early ages when he was, like, fresh out of college. And I think still in college, like, he would go to malls, park his car on, like, the shipping dock, and steal and, like, not rob banks.
Oh, right.
Shut up. Rob malls. So, like, he admitted to a lot of things, but the fact he couldn't admit to one of, I feel like, his most notorious, like, in, like, little chapters.
Well, just his legacy.
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't own up to anything, and that's what, that honestly baffles me. But regardless, the jury found him guilty, and they gave him the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, this was the first time in these interviews that he ever confessed to any level of anything that he was ever accused of. And what's interesting, the little bit of psychology that this reporter ended up using on him was, you get Ted Bundy in a room, and you're sitting there with a tape recorder. They've got 75 tapes and over 100 hours of Ted Bundy talking. And at the beginning, they weren't able to get him to talk about it at all. Like, he would start to talk about it, and then he'd change the subject. And it was incredibly frustrating. So what this reporter ended up doing was saying, all right, we're going to need to take a more narrative form of this. Like, I'm going to need you to help me out a little bit. So he has Ted talk in the third person.
Which is the true, I mean, like, if none of this gave you the psychopathic vibe, like, talking about yourself in the third person.
It's a little weird.
Describing the crimes you did in third person.
It's a little weird.
Like, yeah, like, Ted might have done this.
Well, he never said Ted. This. He always said, if someone were to do this, they would do this.
He didn't even resonate with the identification.
No, at the beginning. So, at the beginning, it was, if someone were to go about murdering someone this way, they'd do it like this. Or they'd probably end up doing this or this. And towards the end, it got him to open up to where he ended up implicating himself and being completely honest. Which is crazy.
Which is great for the psychological part of the reporter. Like, being able to do that, manipulate a psychopathic serial killer?
Manipulate the manipulator.
Wow, what a king.
Yeah.
What a fucking king.
So, on January 24th, 1989, Bundy was electrocuted in Florida's Old Sparky electric chair. There's footage of people standing outside the prison with, like, signs and fucking t-shirts, bro, of, like, the date and, like, crazy slogans about frying Bundy and all that stuff, but... Yeah.
I mean, but kudos to them.
Like, yeah, people were ready. Like,
yeah.
For him to die.
Of course. And especially, I bet all the girls that, like, fit the identification.
It was, like, a big, like, feminist thing, too. Like, for someone of that.
Well, and even the fact that, like, he admitted to, like, wanting to overpower. Like, he wasn't looking for victims that were willing to give him consent. He actually went for victims that he knew would not. Like, he went for, like, the innocent school girls. He liked the chase. Yeah, like, he loved the chase. He loved the, like, over-empowerment of them. Like, the physical feeling of being able to overthrow women, especially on their come-up in equal rights. Like, this was a big thing during that, especially at University of Washington.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Like, there was riots on the street. That is what literally drew so many of his victims actually to that college was the feminist movement and, like, how they acted in the streets. So, like...
So, yeah, it was a big deal
yeah.
for a lot of women.
Well, and especially his girlfriend, Liz, even, like, when she didn't know it was him, she was kind of scared, like, wow, like, I fit the description. That description is me.
In the movie, she ends up asking him at the end, like, did you ever want to kill me? Did you ever want to kill me? And I thought that was, because she did. She looked exactly like all the other women.
No, and, like, the real life...
Imagine finding that out. That, like, your longtime boyfriend who
you're the blueprint.
Yeah.
Like, you're the fucking blueprint.
Like, you matched that. You could have been next. Like, you were right there with him the entire time.
Well, and I can't imagine the
fear that I would have felt. Even after, because she learned that after he was incarcerated. Like, he wasn't in her life anymore at that point.
Yeah.
But even imagine, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. Honestly, to know that I was sleeping next to that man, and he had every opportunity to kill me.
And her daughter?
Exactly.
Bro, like, oh my God. He's in all their family pictures. And the fact of, like, the white water raft thing, I guarantee you, he kind of meant it when he pushed her over.
I
think he truly meant it.
Why push her over?
And not help her? Like, she had to climb on that hoe by herself.
Oh, he definitely meant it. He meant it just... He was like, well, if it happens to happen,
like, good for me. But if she comes back up, like, I'll just be like, like, laugh it off.
Oh, man. Crazy. Well, everyone, there you have it. There is Ted Bundy. We are almost at an hour. Brooke and I want to just kind of add on to this. Brooke and I both did research on this, which is super fun, because the last episode we did, I knew pretty much everything.
Yeah, I just got to be able to put my input in it.
Yeah, it was a little story.
But we watched two separate series, so we were able to conjoin
our information, which made this really fun, and actually a lot longer than the other episode. Yeah, so,
because we both had a lot to say, so that was really cool.
Yeah, hope you found this informational and entertaining.
And also, to end it, what do you think?
Oh, man. What do I think? I'll have to make this quick, because I don't want this to go over an hour. I don't know. I'm always baffled by just his appearance and how he was able to manipulate people. And honestly, I think often, like, you know, I have brown hair, and I part it down the middle sometimes, and I would say I'm fairly pretty. I could have
gorgeous. In case you can't see her, bitch is stunning.
In the 70s, I'm a kind person. In the 70s, if he had come across me and I agreed to help him, you know, I've thought about it. Not like, I don't think about it all the time, but like, whenever I do this,
would Ted Bundy kill me and abduct me?
I think about it nightly. I think about it whenever I do this, whenever I look at this case, like, would I have fallen victim to Ted Bundy if I had ever been in that exact circumstance? It's just crazy to think about that, you know, I fit that description. Yeah. And it's even crazier to think about that I might fit the description of a serial killer, like the victim description of a serial killer that's local.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is insane.
Whew. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are over an hour. I apologize. But thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your continued support for the Crime Light. We really appreciate it. And keep shining.